We are in the midst of a longevity revolution. A person in the United States turns 65 years old every 8 seconds, and that's presenting challenges for us all. Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. Rabbi Richard Adress joins us. He is the director of the Department of Jewish Family Concerns for the Union for Reform Judaism, based in New York City. He's in Kansas City for presentations at the Jewish Community Center and at an area hospital. Rabbi Adress, he just finished a presentation entitled To Honor and Respect at the Jewish Community Center here. What were your key messages to the group around that issue?
Well, hi. First of all, thank you for inviting me to be part of this. The key messages really were based upon an interpretation from Jewish tradition on where what we call the art of caregiving really emerges. Those are three texts within the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, as we call it, a text in Deuteronomy, a text in Leviticus, and a text in Exodus, which talk about two Hebrew words, terah, which we usually refer to as to mean in this context the idea of respect, and kabed, which has the concept of honor. And so it's basically, how do we understand these concepts of honoring and respect? The texts themselves talk about honoring father and mother, and then respecting mother and father. So this is the sort of like theological foundation for what we call the art of caregiving.
Well, that respect and honor, that not only mother and father, that's not only daughter and son or other family members, it's medical professionals that are caregiving for particular individuals, anyone that touches that individual.
One would hope so, yeah. I mean, the literal meaning of the text has to do with, you know, parents and child, but really, as you point out correctly, it is really broadened, and a lot of the literature and interpretations really understand of how one approaches this, what we call the art of caregiving, which is an art and not a science, as every physician and social worker and clergy person, et cetera, can attest to. So, yes, it is really much – that's the beginning, and it sort of like blossoms out.
When you say the art, we're looking for that textbook where we're looking for that – final rule, the black and white, yeah. And none of the gray, and that's just not the case,
no,
is it?
No. As all of us probably listening to this know, that we live most of our lives in the land of gray, and especially in these areas of bioethics and in many cases caregiving, and related to that and aging, there's a lot of gray because people change, the circumstances change, context change. People's points of view as to what they want in various parts of their life change. What may be true in this particular situation one week may radically change in another week, depending upon what happens in a circumstance or a context of an individual or a family situation. So, yeah, there's a lot of gray.
One of the things that you brought up today was around the idea of rituals, that there's
right.
a need for new rituals now. Talk about that.
Well, We found in the project that we created for the Reform Movement called the Sacred Aging Project, which is really the, you know, the programmatic base of all this. And it was an unintended consequence. I didn't expect we didn't expect this to emerge, but what do we know?
It's the art, remember.
It's an art. Now, we found that as we piloted these programs before we actually published the program manual, that we found an increasing interest on the part of people for some sort of ritualization of blessings to accompany this longevity revolution, these new life stages. If you accept the premise, which I do, that we've created in essence a brand new life stage called caregiver that can last for decades. There's always been caregivers, but because of what's happening now in our society, you can be a caregiver for not only years but decades, and probably some people listening to this know exactly what I'm talking about. That as people move through various stages as a result of this longevity revolution and caregiving revolution, people look for and wish for and have adapted and developed rituals that speak to these various stages, both positively, in good times and in less than good times.
So it's around celebrating a special birthday, maybe 60 years old, maybe 65.
It's celebrating a special birthday. I had one student who came up with the idea that there should be a ritual for when somebody signs an advance directive, which is really a momentous transition. That you're putting, you've had this conversation and you're putting your wishes for the end of your life and delegating a proxy in case you can't speak, etc. Rather than just sitting in the lawyer's office like I did, you know, very coldly, you know, here, sign these papers, thank you very much. Why not have some sort of ritual, 30 seconds to say, you know, this is a momentous stage in my life. This is part of this major transition. That's just for an example.
Well, you're speaking to the choir here at the Bioethics Center. It's around advanced directives. And we have a product, a booklet called Caring Conversations, where we advance the idea that it's important to have that conversation.
Right. What we try and teach using the book that we created for the movement called The Time to Prepare, what we try to teach congregations is you have to have this program every single year in a congregation. You have to bring together the clergy, the funeral director, the medical person, the social worker person, the elder care lawyer, to walk a congregation through the laws of a particular state or jurisdiction or province, what they say, what their tradition, what the faith tradition has to say about end-of-life issues, and allow people in a safe way to have this conversation, as opposed to, as you know, having to make some of these decisions in an intensive care unit when the pressure of everything is upon you. And a lot of times that's not the time to make those decisions.
Stepping back to rituals again, because of all these situations, there are some dicey situations. And you were talking about a ritual of almost signing of a contract that would allow a committed couple that should one start suffering from dementia, Alzheimer's, or something like that, where they would give each other permission to seek out comfort outside of their marriage.
Yeah, this has gotten – whenever we do this workshop on the art of caregiving and we get to the ritual component and get to this part, it sort of like wakes people up because it is an attempt to really in many ways ask the question of redefining what many people would see as adultery. But the reality is, as many of the people listening to us know, there are people who are living this. They'll have a spouse who is in an Alzheimer's unit, who really is never coming out, who really has no knowledge or concept of really what present is or where they are, may not even recognize their children or their spouse. And the well spouse is still young and vibrant and meets somebody. And it's not necessarily a physical relationship, but an emotional relationship, companionship. I've run across the situations where it does become a physical relationship. And what do you do with that? Is it adultery? Is it a different explanation? Do we have to revisit this whole thing in light of medical technology and longevity and the growth in Alzheimer's and dementia? So, yeah, it makes for some interesting conversation. I personally believe that religious institutions, churches, mosques, synagogues should have this conversation.
I've been trying to remember the name of the former Supreme Court Justice.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah, and in her situation, it's her husband who has Alzheimer's, who has established a relationship.
Right.
And so the flip side of that can be there as well.
Well, there's a Julie Christie movie that actually used in class when I teach this at our seminary, Away From Her. It's a movie, I guess it's about – it's several years old – and it's a similar situation, and it's a story of Julie Christie who develops early onset Alzheimer's, eventually finds herself in a Alzheimer's facility. Her husband, the husband meets somebody who's in a similar situation, and you could just see this dance that takes place, and it raises – it's a very difficult film. It's a – I did it last semester in the fall of 10, and one of my students just literally said I walked out of class and
I can't handle this
because there was, it was too. And I understand that this is very. This is not theoretical. This is people are living this every day. And but if a religious institution or movement or denomination is going to have relevance, it really I think has to talk about some of this stuff.
With all of this, what are the special challenges for the professional caregivers, the doctors, the nurses, the social workers? What are their challenges?
Well, the more I teach this, and the more I live it, because I'm living it as a caregiver. I'm beginning to think that a space, a distance, some objectivity for the professional, the ability to negotiate family dynamics that I see not only on a personal level but on a professional level. Because, as you know, that in situations like this, repressed family dynamics from years past a lot of times bubble up. And
we like to say it's not Mayberry RFD.
No, it's certainly not. And a physician can get caught in the middle very easily. A social worker can get caught in the middle very easily. And I know many of my colleagues have stories of being caught in the middle. I think for the professional, the ability to take some distance and have some space and maintain some objectivity. The challenge, of course, is when you have to, as the professional, then step into the role of the caregiver, and the objectivity gets lost because, as many of us have found, it's really almost impossible to be the professional objective and see your mother or your father or your spouse or your child or your sister or your brother and take care of them. There's a boundary there that's very, very difficult. Talk about gray.
One of the things that you were talking about today, which I think – a lot of us are living, is around the idea of dignity and mm-hmm. being able to maintain that. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well,
it's difficult to achieve whenever you have a situation of, you know, an older parent that's suffering from dementia.
The whole concept of dignity, if you took a look at when we analyze all the texts in Jewish tradition that speak to health and wellness and medicine, and if you're able to reduce them to, I think, one fundamental ethic. The ethic I usually teach is called the dignity and sanctity of human life and the preservation of human life in dignity and sanctity, which, of course, people then raise their hand and says, well, what does that mean? And that's exactly the point. It's very subjective. It's very contextual, because my concept of dignity in 2011, in May of 2011, may not be the same concept of dignity in May of 2041. The context, the things that go into how people make decisions, which are their own sense of autonomy, the impact of medical technology, and their own spirituality. I mean, medical technology has changed in many ways how one approaches dignity. There are people who are walking, playing golf now, who 5 years ago you would have gone to their funeral because of the wild card of technology, and they may have had to undergo through certain issues that would be less than dignified, but the overall benefit outweighs that temporary risk. At the end of life, people are dealing with very, very tragic situations and see dignity compromised. The whole assisted suicide debate and the whole autonomy debate, this is where the wild card of autonomy comes in. This is where faith can come in and be a very, very powerful tool and how individuals can seek dignity, because in most religious traditions, even until the last breath, one can still be a vehicle for the doing of what we call the mitzvah. So even visiting that person at the end of their life, allows some sense of the deed to take place. And many religious traditions, Judaism, much of Catholicism, Christianity, also understand the use of palliative care and drugs. There's tons of responsive commentaries in the Jewish tradition that open the door in a very humane way so that no one has to suffer, because at least in our tradition, suffering is not a valuable – it is not a value at the end of life. So that even if at the very, very end of life – and there are technical terms for all this we don't have the time to go into – that the use of painkillers, palliative medication to release pain and suffering is permissible, and even becomes the greater good. So that no one has to suffer from excruciating pain, et cetera, et cetera. There are responses basically that talk about the principle of double effect within Jewish tradition.
I opened this podcast by saying, and I was quoting you, so I hope it's a correct statistic that there is a person turning 65 years old in America every 8 seconds.
Yes. As of the Census Bureau that released this at the beginning of this year, as of January 1st, 2011, according to the United States Census Bureau, one person turns 65 in this country every 8 seconds.
So my question is, or my point is that we're going to have to figure this out whether we want to or not.
Oh, yeah. We used to talk about the future. The future's here. I mean, the next 25 years, as the baby boom generation, which is now basically between the late 40s and the mid-60s, as they move through and carrying our generational baggage with us, reshaping everything. So it's going to be a very, very interesting ride in the next 20 years to see how that happens. The Beatles were right. You know, those two songs, Will You Still Need Me, Will You Still Whatever, When I'm 64,
right.
And the Simon and Garfunkel, to quote old Torah, from the late 60s, this wonderful song called Old Friends, which is on one – I think it's – I don't remember what album it's on. But it's this little melody about, you know, two friends sitting alone on a park bench, and the line is how strange it is to be 70. It's there's many sermons in that.
Rabbi Richard Adretz is the director of the Department of Jewish Family Concerns for the Union for Reform Judaism, based in New York City. For more information on sacred aging, visit JewishSacredAging.com. That's JewishSacredAging.com. I'm Laurel LeBou. Thanks for listening to the Y Weapons Channel.